could see Sancho taking a closer look at the nightstand. Something? A notepad with a local number written on it. Mobile phone? Nope. We'll have to check if he made any calls through the front. He gestured toward the desk. What about the computer? We'll look at it, but only after we're sure he's really missing. Want me to phone the number into Ruby and find out who it is? I've got a suspicion, but go ahead. He got out his cell and followed me as I vacated the room, careful to close the door behind us. Walking down the steps, I stopped at the front desk and spoke with the perky young woman there who was inordinately excited to be in on the crime of the century. He only paid for the one night? She nodded enthusiastically.
Yeah, but that's not unusual. Sometimes people aren't sure what they're doing and then pay for another night. Housekeeping knocked on the door, but there was no answer, so they opened up and saw all the personal items and immediately closed it.
I propped an elbow onto the counter.
I didn't, but Bobby checked him in last night. I came in at 8 this morning, but I never saw him at the breakfast buffet or anything.
Is Bobby around?
No, but I can get him on the phone.
She reached for the receiver and dialed.
Normally I don't make much of a fuss, but the car had been there all day, and I was getting worried, so I kept calling up to the room, and when nobody answered...
Her attention returned to the phone.
Bobby, the sheriff is here and he wants to talk to you.
She handed me the phone. Hey, Bobby, Walt Longmire. You checked Mr. Light in last night?
The voice was young and sounded tired.
Uh-huh. And what time was that?
He thought about it.
Late? Like after midnight?
Did you ever hear or see anything of him after that?
No, not a peep.
Okay. Well, if you think of something, could you give me a call?
I handed the phone back to the young woman.
Thanks. What are you going to do?
Nothing for now.
Nothing?
Well, he took a shower last night and slept in the bed, and all his stuff is still in the room with no sign of foul play or anything else for that matter. His vehicle is still parked outside, so I'm guessing that he'll show up. Maybe he went for a run and turned his ankle or something. We'll check the hospital and the out clinics, and then we'll just keep an eye open.
She seemed disappointed.
That's it?
I don't want to put out a full-blown manhunt and call in the bloodhounds and then find out he's eating a sandwich over at the co-op.
We have bloodhounds?
One. Well, he's a hound, although I don't think he's into the blood thing.
I turned to look at Sancho and started out the door.
Come on, let's go look at the vehicle.
Rounding the building, I spotted the four-door Wrangler parked alongside, which was easy because it was the only vehicle there.
What? They were worried about parking space?
Sancho smiled. She's a criminal justice student at Sheridan College.
Oh.
She says the instructors over there use some of your incidents as case studies.
I pulled up to the black Jeep. Oh, boy.
The doors were locked, and there was the usual detritus of highway travel. An energy drink in the cup holder, an open bag of cashews, and a map of Durant in the Bighorn Mountain area with a highlighted section that was the Echapare Ranch.
I'm assuming that the phone number was the Echapare place.
Your assumption would be correct. I pointed through the glass. Well, his cell phone is on the center console, so if he made a call, he did it from here or returned his phone to the car, although the night manager said he never saw him.
Cesar Pretoria nodded toward a door at the middle of the building.
He could have come that way, then the kid would have never seen him.
I gestured toward the dark globes at the corner eaves of the building. They've got security cameras.
Do you want to ask Pepper Anderson in there if we can run through the tapes from last night?
Sure.
You want to loan me your cell phone and dial the Echapare place for me?
Sure.
He did, and then handed me the phone. It's ringing. As he walked away, I held the thing to my ear and glanced around at the surrounding area, including the sidewalk that led under the interstate overpass and back toward the center of town. The phone rang 5 times, and then an answering machine with a pre-recorded message asked me to leave a message, so I did.
Avarani, this is Walt Longmire, and I'd like to speak with you about your son-in-law, Donnie Lott. If you could call me back at the office, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Hitting the red button, I stood there looking up at the passing vehicles on the highway, and then back at the only vehicle in the parking lot, noticing the wallet on the dash where he'd had it last night.
Where did you go, Donnie, my wandering boy?
He hasn't heard anything from him?
Ruby pulled the phone from her ear and looked up at me.
That's what he said.
duly noted in the post-it I just handed you.
Didn't even know he was coming to get his son?
As near as I can tell, no.
I guess I need to call Colorado.
I guess you do.
She went back to talking on her phone.
No, that would be the predator board you need to talk to.
Entering my office, I sat and hit the space bar on my computer and drew warmth from the two smiling faces on the screen. How are you guys? Me, I'm doing pretty well. Have I told you about the dead sheep herder? Nope. Well, he hung himself, but then they found mule hairs on his pants.
Am I interrupting something?
I looked up to find Vic staring at me. She sat and glanced at the computer with which I'd just been in conversation.
So have you finally gone off the proverbial deep end?
I'm in the shallows.
Hell, that's where I live.
The son-in-law is missing? As of the moment. I guess I'm calling Colorado, but I got distracted by my computer, and we were having a conversation.
You know they don't talk back, right?
I hadn't noticed. Pulling out my Rolodex, I flipped through to Etchepare and noted the other number I'd scribbled in the margin. I called it and was rewarded with the voice of Jeannie Lott.
Hello?
Ms. Lott, this is Walt Longmire, the sheriff up here in Absaroka County.
Oh, thank God.
I'm assuming you're aware of the situation?
Do you have my husband there with you?
Not at this time, but I do have his belongings and a vehicle at a motel here in Durant. There was a pause as she readjusted the phone and sighed.
What are you talking about?
Were you aware he was coming up here last night?
Well, he was upset about Liam and said he was going for a hike and left in the Jeep, but when he didn't come back, I had a suspicion he might be heading that way. I've been calling his cell, but there's no answer.
So you haven't heard from him since he left?
No.
And what do you mean by belongings and abandoned vehicle? He appears to be missing. There was a very long pause, and his phone is in the center console of his car along with his wallet on the dash.
He never goes anywhere without his phone.
I waited a moment before adding, it may be that he's just out taking a hike, but with your permission, I'd like to open his vehicle and get his wallet and phone to see if they might help in locating him.
Yes, of course.
Needless to say, if you hear from him, would you give us a call?
Certainly. And Sheriff?
Yep. Her voice was low.
Do you know if he's had any interaction with my father or Liam?
Not yet, but you will be the first one I will contact. I hung up and looked at my undersheriff. If Abe doesn't call back soon, I'm going out there.
Oh, joy.
But wait, there's more. Two pains in the ass for one. What?
Ferris Kaplan has arranged a town meeting concerning the wolf problem at the firehouse this evening with a large carnivore response team.
Her expression changed to one of disbelief.
Who knew the duck detectives had a large carnivore response team?
That's short notice.
I think that's the idea, so that they can say they had a public meeting about shooting the wolf without the inherent difficulties of dealing with the public. You know how troublesome they can be.
A wolf?
No, the public.
So a stealth meeting.
You got it.
And we have to attend?
Ferris said he would appreciate us being there. You know, strength in numbers?
Right.
She studied me. What's wrong?
Nothing. I stood and came around the desk. You want to call up Ted's Towing and tell them we'll meet them over at the Best Western to haul the vehicle here and then Jimmy the Jeep so we can check Lott's stuff?
Sure.
Then we can go to the clandestine wolf meeting? I raised a fist. The pack. Ted already had the Jeep open by the time we got there. I signed the receipt for the towing service, handed the clipboard back to the driver, and turned toward the Wrangler in which Vic sat in its driver's seat. She was going through Lott's wallet.
He's got $7 in here.
Yep, he was running out of money when I met him last night.
She reached for his phone, pulling it from the console and holding it up to her face. 8 calls from the wife in Colorado and 1 local call late last night.
Etchepare?
Yeah.
She stared at the screen.
Nothing after that.
Her eyes came up.
Okay, worst case scenario. He calls old Abe, who, what, comes out here and gets him? Why?
I don't know.
And then does what with him? Shoot, shovel, and shut the fuck up?
Leaving his possessions and vehicle at the Best Western doesn't make for very nuanced criminal activity, does it?
No.
placing the phone in a plastic bag and sealing it, she glanced down in the space between the seat and the console, where entire universes are devoured. Sliding a hand between, she pulled a business card from the floorboard.
Mickey Southern, Pervert Hunter?
Sizer Batoria mentioned this guy, said he'd been in touch and was coming up from Denver to speak with us about a situation here in county.
You think Lott's been in contact with him?
I stared at the card on my desk. I'd say it's a good bet.
So, she pointed at the card. This guy hunts perverts?
I guess. Sancho said he had a show on the internet or something outing pedophiles. There's no contact information, no email, no phone, nothing. Turning the business card toward her, she studied it, and then straightened from it as if it were giving off a bad smell.
Walt, there's only one reason Donnie Lott would be in touch with this guy.
I know.
You think he confronted Abe and things went sideways?
I don't know.
This is getting creepy.
She took the card and came around my desk, moving me aside with a hip.
Well, let's check out the pervert station, shall we?
How do we do that? She typed, her fingertips driving the keys almost as hard as I did.
Easy, we just put in Mickey Southern, Pervert Hunter. I'm afraid of what will come up if we just put in Pervert Hunter.
A string of photos appeared on the left of a hooded individual, with street scenes in the background and graphics emblazoned across the top that read, Mickey Southern, Pervert Hunter.
Holy crap! This dude is a cottage industry. He's got over 50 episodes of this stuff.
She clicked the thingamajig, and the screen filled with the hooded guy, with a mechanically altered voice, talking about texting with an individual in Denver who thought he was communicating with a 14-year-old girl. The quality was rough, and you never saw Mickey Southern's face, which led me to believe that he was the one running the camera. Each episode was about 10 minutes in length and showcased the pervert hunter confronting pedophiles or suspected pedophiles on the street, in cars, and in a house I assumed he used as bait into which he could lure the targets. Each episode ended with Southern facing the camera and giving the lowdown on his activities and reporting to authorities the individuals he was outing in the same mechanically altered voice. Mick stopped the onslaught of episodes and turned to look at me.
Wow.
Yep. Seems dangerous for a private citizen to be doing this kind of thing, not to mention illegal.
I can't believe somebody hasn't shot the guy.
Maybe nobody really knows who he is. She stood, folding her arms, and then, reaching down, typed in more information.
Obviously, people get in touch with him about situations with predators that they know. Hitting a final keystroke, she gestured with a hand. His website with a contact email. I guess that's the only way to get in touch with him.
Understandable. I can see how a man like this might have enemies.
So, what do you want to do?
I want to know if Donnie Lott has been in contact with him and concerning what?
In an official capacity?
Ours, yep. We've got a missing person, and I want to know what this pervert hunter knows. She began typing and after a moment set off a message.
There. But I don't know when we'll hear something, if ever. I don't know what this guy's relationship is with law enforcement, but I didn't see any cops in those videos.
But he said he contacted authorities to report these predators, right?
Right.
So to whom did he report them?
I can track the provider that's used by the website domain, that I imagine is in Denver, and then give the local police a call to see if they've ever had any contact with this guy.
Tell them we have reason to believe that this Mickey Southern, if that's his name, has communicated with a missing person, and we're tracking all the leads. Also, Sancho said that this Southern guy had been in touch with him, I'm assuming through email, so you might want to see if it's the same email as the website.
She stood there smiling at me. You're getting so tech-savvy.
Thanks.
There's only one problem.
What's that?
It's 7 o'clock at night and Sancho has gone home.
Oh.
And we're going to be late for the wolf meeting.
I slumped in my chair. I forgot about that. She glanced at the Seth Thomas on my wall.
We're already 2 minutes late.
Gathering myself, I stood and then walked into the main office where Dog was lying at the top of the steps, taking advantage of the cool metal treads that had resided there since 1909. I think we should take a wolf to the wolf meeting, don't you?
She regarded the beast. He's not really White Fang. More Buck from Call of the Wild.
I shook my head as I followed her down the steps, turned off the lights, and saluted Andrew Carnegie before locking the door behind me.
You have the rock? It's Sancho's tonight.
We piled into my truck and drove to the town bypass, approaching the modern firehouse complex at the edge of town.
You know the difference between firefighters and Boy Scouts?
What?
Boy Scouts have adult supervision.
She leaned forward to look at the mammoth amount of parked cars.
Oh, shit. There goes the clandestine part of the public meeting.
Wheeling through the crowded lot alongside one of the quasi-bypasses in our tiny town, I spied an opening alongside the dumpster which was close to the building. I think maybe we should leave Dog in here, just in case anybody gets the idea of shooting him.
Agreed.
Inside, I was confronted by a crowd in the anteroom, and what looked to be standing room only in the event area visible through the open doorway. There was a small platform set up at the south end, and I could see Ferris Kaplan standing on it, attempting to get people to stop shouting and yelling. Moving through the logjam at the doorway, I gently shouldered through toward the stage. Ferris looked relieved to see me and gestured for me to step up with the other men from Game and Fish. I gave Vic a hand. She joined us, muttering,
"What a clusterfuckectomy."
Ferris raised his hands and tried to hush the crowd, but he failed. I was about to raise my own voice when there was an ear-piercing whistle that literally shook the windows of the meeting room. I turned and could see Vic with the pinkies of both hands at the corners of her mouth.
"Thanks. No problem."
Turning back to the hundreds of people who packed the room, I raised my hands. "Folks, if you don't let Ferris speak, then we're not going to know what's really going on. So if you would, please leave your comments and questions until he gets done, okay?" The grumbling died down quickly, and I turned to look at the poor, besieged man from Game and Fish, who reclaimed his voice.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I know you're all pretty concerned about this wolf that's been spotted in the Bighorns, and I just want to assure you that from our knowledge, this is a singular wolf that split off from one of the Yellowstone packs."
He took a breath.
"We've got some folks here from Wildlife Services that can answer your questions about the wolf better than I can. There's more than one up there."
I turned and stared at Les Harris in the bright orange hunting cap that he always wore in hopes that he'd pipe down. And he did, which was good because I could feel a pain growing in my side and creeping up into my head. Vic noticed the look on my face, and her eyes narrowed.
"You okay?"
"Yep." Ferris continued.
"This is Jim Tolles from Predator Control, and he's got some facts for you."
A trim-looking individual wearing the traditional red shirt and green ball cap, Jim Tolles raised a hand and the crowd grew quieter.
"There have been a number of questionable reports that there are a large number of wolves in the mountains, but with the information we have, it looks to be a singular wolf that was fitted with a smart collar and is being monitored by the Forest Service."
Jim turned toward me.
"Walt, you've actually seen the wolf, and he was alone, right?"
I nodded, even though my head hurt.
"Yep, he's an adult, male, older." "Why didn't you shoot him?"
I turned to look at Harris.
"Not my job, Les." "Not your job to protect the people and property of Absaroka County?"
I stared at him for a moment. "From the number of applicants I've received, there appears to be no end of individuals who want to shoot this wolf.
But not you."
I continued staring at him. "As you know, Absaroka County and the Bighorn Mountains are predator zones, which means that, like coyotes, anybody can shoot that wolf on sight.
But not you."
Emboldened, he glanced at some of his buddies.
"Seems to me you've been gone from the county so much, you don't know what your job is anymore."
I said nothing, but the silence in the oversized room was now palpable. Tolles, sensing that we needed to move on quickly, added,
"The wolf may have killed domestic stock and is in the process of being dealt with swiftly, but there are no signs that this is a breeding pair or that there are even any other wolves on the mountain." "What about the dead sheep herder?"
I turned back to Les. "I don't think that the warden is finished."
"Thank you, Walt." He shook his head. "It would appear that there's been a suicide in the mountains, but the two events are unrelated."
Another man in the crowd asked, "Didn't this wolf eat a guy?" No, that appears to have been the result of scavenging and not predation. Analysis shows that the Yellowstone wolves have quite a variety in diet, including ungulates, rodents, vegetation, and shepherds, a voice cried out from the crowd. There was a roiling of laughter as the poor man continued. Wolves most often hunt in packs, and since this is a singular wolf, he's more likely to take advantage of whatever meals might come his way.
Like sheep,
a different voice. There was more laughter as the game warden continued. And domestic livestock, which is why the animal will be swiftly dealt with.
Dealt with in what way?
I glanced around and finally spotted Kasich Chichu. Jim folded his arms and looked at her. The wolf will be killed.
By whom?
Jim glanced at me again, but Ferris stepped forward and spoke.
Well, we've had a number of applicants, but Absaroka County is somewhat unique in that we don't rely on state predator board hunters, but rather private individuals within the county with whom we have contracts.
She moved closer.
Why?
Well, because it falls to the county commissioners and the predator board to...
No, why kill the wolf?
Because those are the rules in a predator zone.
She stepped closer, and you had to admire the chutzpah it took to show up in a meeting like this one.
How do you know this wolf killed the sheep?
She held up a sheet of paper.
I've got a report from the Wolf Conservancy that states the kill was actually by a mountain lion.
The game warden stepped forward, holding out a hand. Can I see that?
No, you may not. It's the only copy I have.
He glanced at Jim and then continued.
Well, I'm not going to respond to an unofficial report that I haven't seen, but I seriously doubt that it's going to counter official scientific results from the state authorities.
She waved the piece of paper some more.
It also states that the wolf in question is an actual Wyoming wolf and not an Arctic transplant.
Ferris shook his head and then approached the edge of the stage. The department's position on those Irrimotas wolves is that there were possibly a few back in the 90s, but that they've pretty much gone extinct, especially with the introduction of the larger Canadian species. As far as I know, there's no data supporting the existence of those animals here in Wyoming. She continued to hold the paper up.
And yet here he is.
Look, Miss Chichu. She shook her head and then pulled the paper down, folding it and stuffing it into her down coat pocket.
Game and Fish tranked and collared this animal, this innocent animal, and now you people are attempting to drive up a witch hunt.
Miss Chichu, all we're attempting to do is discover the facts and appease all parties that are involved.
Appease? What about the wolf? What are you doing about his right to live?
My head was killing me, but I stepped forward. Jim, in your estimation, how many wolves are in the Bighorn Mountains? He glanced around at the packed room for effect.
One, two, at the most, at any given time.
Doesn't exactly constitute a pack, does it?
No, like I said, we've seen no denning activity or mated pairs in the Bighorns. The singular wolves we've seen are young males that have either been kicked out of their packs or simply moved out in search of a life in a place that no longer exists.
He glanced at me. But from what Walt has told me, this guy is a pretty big boy and old, which means he probably was challenged by another younger male and driven off from his pack in Yellowstone.
And we've got a sheriff who's too chicken shit to shoot him.
Harris glanced at Vic.
Or maybe he's got other things in his mind.
His words hung there in the air for so long I wasn't even sure he'd said them. Suddenly, I was now off the stage and standing in front of him, and there were words coming out of my mouth, words I didn't even recognize. There was emotion in the words, even though I felt completely removed, and it was like I was watching someone else's life unfolding in front of my disinterested eyes.
Wow!
Vic sat in the truck next to me and readjusted the louvers and the heat vents.
Just wow!
We sat there quietly until the silence overtook me, and I had to ask, I'm guessing my response was a little over the top.
Wow!
All right.
Wow!
She turned and smiled a wicked little smile.
I have been waiting for that for years.
Pretty bad, huh? She stared at me more than a little nonplussed.
You don't remember any of it?
No. Honestly, it was like a fit.
It was a fit, all right.
She blew air from her mouth like a modified steam whistle and shook her head.
I thought you were going to kill him. I glanced down at my lap and felt the heat from my face and the stillness in my hands finally fading.
Did I touch him?
No, but your chin was about an eighth of an inch from the bill of his cap.
This is almost as tall as me.
He wasn't by the time you were finished.
She leaned back in her seat.
Granted, he could have stepped up onto that pile of shit he let go down one of his pant legs by the time you were done with him.
Did anybody else hear it?
Oh, yes, she nodded. Everybody in the place heard it. By the time you were done, I'm pretty sure everybody in Wyoming heard it.
Did I threaten him?
She started to speak and then turned to give me a priceless look of incredulity.
Oh, yes, you most indeed threatened him.
Raising a hand to my face, I rubbed some feeling into it and felt a twinge from the scar that bisected my eye.
So, I guess I need to find him and apologize?
I think we're well beyond the realm of apology.
Great.
I didn't even know you knew some of those words.
She studied me.
You really don't remember any of it? Not a word?
No.
She kept her eyes on me for a while more and then quickly changed the subject. Well, it doesn't look good for Larry.
Who?
Larry the Wolf. She reached back and ruffled the hair behind Dog's ear in species-specific sympathy. 777M. Whatever. She turned back. Who are the contracted county killers?
Heck if I know. Of all the scat that is hitting the fan, that particular load of feces is not my problem.
Wheeling out of the fireman's complex, I took a left and started south toward the Echipari place.
Do you want me to drop you off at home, or do you want to go see a sheep ranch?
She pointed south. I feel I should know where our victims are coming from.
It's not as exciting as you might think.
Neither is soccer. She studied the road ahead. You really think Old Honest Abe has done something drastic to his son-in-law?
I thought about it. It's just odd. I mean, why wouldn't Echipari just wait for Donnie to come out there in the middle of nowhere to do something rather than leaving the car and personal belongings at the motel?
Passion strikes at inopportune moments.
Yep.
And then we have the dead shepherd.
Yep.
This is all sizing up with Abe as the bad guy.
Yep.
Is that all you've got to say?
Yep. We made the gravel cutoff that leads underneath the ranch gate and the sign that read Echipari.
Geez, this place really is out in the middle of nowhere. She leaned forward as we drove on, looking for some signs of life in the sprawl of outbuildings. And don't say yep.
Pulling to the left, I circled the empty sheep paddocks and parked in front of the dark house. I figured they were in bed, as with all good ranchers, but the ever-present travel-all was missing. Dog jumped into the front and watched as Vic met me at the steps. She unsnapped the safety strap on her sidearm.
If he comes out with a shotgun, I'm letting his ass.
I reached up and knocked on the wooden screen door, the screening strong enough to hold back a wildebeest. There was no response, so I knocked again. We waited, and then I saw a light come on to our right. After a moment, Wilhelmina arrived through the living room and unlocked the door, carefully opening it wide. Slipping off my hat, I leaned in.
Well, it's Walt Longmire.
Pulling her nightgown tighter around her neck, she peered up at me.
Who?
The sheriff.
Is there something wrong?
We're looking for Abe. Is he around?
She glanced back toward the bedroom. He's in bed.
Can we speak with him?
Her tired eyes came back to me. He's awful worn out.
I'm sure he is, but I still need to speak with him if I could.
She stared at me for a moment more and then turned and disappeared as Vic leaned against the other side of the door. She gonna go get the shotgun?
It seemed to take an inordinate amount of time, but Wilhelmina, now wearing a bathrobe, finally came to the door again and looked up at me.
I can't find him.
You mean in bed?
Yes.
Is there some other place he might be?
I don't know. She glanced around. Is it lambing season?
I don't think so.
I get confused.
Yes, ma'am.
He sometimes sleeps in the lambing shed during lambing season.
I nodded and reached out and placed my hand on hers to calm her. Mrs. Etchepare, have you seen Liam?
Her face brightened. Liam, he's my grandson.
Yes, ma'am. Have you seen him?
He sleeps with us.
Is he with you now? She began looking around, so I specified, in your bed. Is Liam in your bed now? Without another word, she turned and turned it off, only to return a few moments later.
He's not there either.
Vic and I looked at each other. So both Liam and Abe are missing? Wilhelmina's eyes tightened.
Abe is missing?
I glanced at Vic again and sighed. Mrs. Etchepare, do you mind if I use your phone? Chapter 10.
So I hear you almost pounded the living crap out of Les Harris last night at the Wolf meeting.
I snugged the receiver a little closer to my ear. And where did you hear that? Tabasco laughed.
Oh, pretty much everywhere, but mostly from his wife, who came in here to lodge a formal complaint.
Sarah.
Yeah, that's her.
There was a pause.
Say, isn't he the one that dropped an elk out of season over in Washakie County last year?
Yep.
Probably trying to feed that wife of his. Boy, she was pissed, boss.
Sighing, I turned and watched Vic and Wilhelmina playing cribbage. Well, in the meantime, run the plates on Abe's International and get them out to the highway patrol in adjacent counties.
Will do.
I hung up the old rotary dial phone and smiled at myself. How's the game going?
She's cheating.
Will looked up.
I am not. She just doesn't know the rules.
Vic accepted another card and smiled.
Evidently, the rules change west of the Mississippi.
I sat in the empty chair. Mrs. Etchepare, are you sure you don't know where Abe and Liam might have gone?
Ha!
She moved her peg, displaying some more cards for Vic's benefit.
They go fishing.
I glanced up at the old wall clock, a tarnished starburst model from the 70s that indicated it was creeping up on midnight along with the next century. Kind of late for fishing. Chuckling to herself, she drew another card.
They like to get an early start.
I sighed and took a cookie from the plate on the table. Oatmeal raisin, one of my favorites. Where do they go fishing, Will?
She waved a hand. Down south, near one of the sheep camps.
Powder River? She studied her cards. Realizing we'd be searching an area roughly 19,500 square miles, I attempted to narrow the field. North Fork?
Nope.
She hooted, laid down more cards, and advanced her peg on the antler board.
No fish up there.
Middle Fork, then?
Yes, but they go all over.
She glanced at me.
Do you like fish?
Sure.
I don't. Tastes fishy to me.
Realizing she wasn't joking, Vic and I shared a look.
Right.
Don't like the bones, either.
Well, as much as I hate breaking up the game, I'm afraid that Vic and I are going to have to be going. She looked crestfallen, but I continued. So you don't have any idea where they might be, or any way to get in touch with them?
No.
And you haven't seen Donnie, either?
Who?
Donnie. Your son-in-law.
No.
She took a cookie for herself.
He's a good boy, our Donnie. He brings me pecan log rolls from the Howard Johnson.
But you haven't seen him recently?
She glanced at me, confused. Howard Johnson?
No, Donnie, your son-in-law.
He's a good boy.
Yep. I stood. Well, have you got somebody who comes and stops by when the boys are out fishing? She nodded, still munching on the cookie.
Mrs. Reynolds, the hired woman, she'll be here at 8. I don't like having people in my home.
She snuck a peek at Vic.
Unless they play cribbage.
We whistled south on the highway at an even 100. Vic glanced out the window at the darkness, intermittently broken by my revolving blue lights.
So do we call Double Tough and get him out of bed?
Nah, let him sleep. She reached back and petted Dog.
What, he needs a shut-eye?
I shook my head at the bad joke. Powder Junction is only 10 miles ahead, and I figure, as crazy as that old Basco is, he wasn't likely to navigate the canyon at night with his grandson in that old travel hall.
Great place to hide a body.
With the kid in the car?
She shook her head. Doesn't make much sense, does it?
None of this does.
She numbered off a finger. One, we've got a dead shepherd, Miguel Hernandez, who was killed.
Possibly killed.
Who tied up the mule, then?
He hangs himself, and the mule wanders off, as mules have a habit of doing, and goes back to the wagon where his buddy is, and some good Samaritan ties him off.
The fuck?
She studied me, more than a little incredulous.
Nobody would have come forward with that information after all the stuff that's been in the press?
I veered into the passing lane with lights and siren at full force and effect, and then swept back into the right-hand side of the road. Mountain folk are different.
Can we at least agree that the shepherd in question is dead?
I shrugged. Another finger came up.
Next, we have a missing father from Colorado, who is related to the rancher who employed the shepherd.
I shrugged again.
Another finger came up. The same rancher who has a habit of surreptitiously running off with his grandson.
I shrugged yet again.
From a family who is known to take target practice on law enforcement.
Tired of shrugging, I grunted.
None of this looks good for old Abe. I mean, the dad had a card from the perv hunter in his car, and the granddad has a history of running off with the kid. Anyway, I'm thinking the shepherd found out about old Abe and got whacked, and then the son-in-law found out about it and got whacked.
That's a lot of whacking for an old man.
Hell, I'm expecting Larry the Wolf to get whacked by old Abe at any minute.
She slipped a cookie from her duty jacket and began gnawing on it, before splitting it in two and handing half back to Dog, who sat with his head hanging between the front seats.
So what do we do when we find them?
Separate them and bring in child services.
That doesn't help us with the missing father.
I studied the road ahead. So we think the father is dead?
We haven't found him. Where the hell could he be?
It's a big county.
He's dead, Walt. Like you always say, buried in a shallow grave and shit off a cliff by a coyote.
If he is, then whoever killed him doesn't care if we know it. As a matter of fact, they might as well be advertising the fact by leaving his car, never mind his personal items, all over the motel room.
Meaning?
They're desperate.
Who's desperate?
Good question. But whoever it is makes them even more dangerous. I took the exit at Powder Junction and was surprised to see one of our vehicles parked at the base of the ramp along with a Wyoming Highway Patrol cruiser on the other side. Putting to a stop between them, I rolled down my window and glanced at Doubletuff.
What, are you guys having a convention?
He got out and came over, leaning on my door.
Size of a Toria called in, so I got up and came over.
He gestured with his chin towards Scott Kirkman, the HP currently assigned to Absaroka County, who now fully occupied Vic's window. Doubletuff's wayward glass eye looked a little skyward.
Scott was passing through when the call came in, so we took up a post in town, but then decided to come up. Been here for about an hour, but so far nothing.
Reaching in behind my seat, he swiped a Dog's nose, who reciprocated by grabbing his hand and holding it. All right. I leaned forward and nodded. We'll head up the Middle Fork and see if we can spot that old International parked at any of the access trailheads. I looked back at DT.
You guys stick it out here.
He tried pushing off, but couldn't move.
Roger that.
We'll eventually take the main road up to Hazleton, and then double back off the mountain into Durant. If you don't hear from us in a couple of hours, we've spotted them and parked, so somebody come in and back us up.
You sure he's on the Middle Fork?
It's what his wife, Wilhelmina, said. Well, sort of. DT glanced over the top of my truck toward the Bighorns.
Still a lot of snow up there,
Vic interrupted.
And? A lot of runoff from the snow melt. The fish are going to be fighting for their lives in that current, and you'd need a beacon on your fly to get them to bite.
She glanced back at me.
Translation?
It's doubtful that they're fishing.
Right.
Turning back to Doubletuff, I nodded. Anything else? He smiled his goofy, lopsided smile, and I could still see the fire damage on his face.
Could you have Dog let go of my hand before you drive off?
Vic leaned back in his seat as he made the turn and headed west.
The color of DT's eye still looks fucked up.
Vic.
What?
She glanced out the window.
So, Middle Fork?
Pretty much.
I would have thought old Abe would have had more imagination than that.
There's good fishing down there when the water isn't like a tsunami.
So, other than to hide, why here?
Sometimes that thing a man is looking for when he goes fishing is fish, sometimes not. Trailing red dust in the darkness behind us for a few miles, we rounded a number of curves and hit a straightaway before slowing at the first turnout where a metallic green international travel hall was parked near a scrabble field with only a minimal piece of footpath visible, leading down into the howling darkness of a gaping canyon. Vic turned and looked at me.
You've got to be kidding.
Aiming my spotlight, I played it across the vehicle and then the rim and into the darkness, so vast it swallowed the light. Outlaw Cave Canyon. Well, you'd have to be an outlaw to want to go down there in the dark. She pulled out her cell phone, looked at it, and then held it up and out the window in a futile search for a signal.
Nothing.
I nodded, turning my spotlight back and switching it off. The actual cave is on up, not too far from where the old Smith cabin used to be.
Smith?
I know, imaginative, huh? We climbed out with Dog, and I met her at Abe's vehicle. I aimed the maglite inside, but didn't see anyone.
So who were the outlaws?
Nobody knows. Some say Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But there's no irrefutable proof as to who was actually there, just some old rawhide beds and a few broken sticks of furniture.
And that's the hole in the wall?
Not exactly. She walked to the edge and looked down as Dog sniffed around the International.
So where is the hole in the wall?
Some say it's an opening in the Red Rocks, a little north of here, and some say it's just a small depression on the rim out on Willow Creek Ranch, where the gang used to run stolen cattle.
Which one do you say it is?
Joining her at the rim, I looked into the darkness along with her. The one on the backlot at 20th Century Fox. She extended her hand.
Give me the flashlight, smartass.
Why?
I'm going down there.
I folded my arms, knowing how fast her hands were. Not without me or not.
She gestured toward the slope. What is that, about a mile down and then a mile back up? You're in no shape to do that.
I didn't move. Then she unsnapped her holster, pulling her sidearm and aiming it at my foot.
Give me the flashlight, or I'm shooting you in the foot.
Dog barked and headbutted her. No, you won't.
Walt?
Starting off, I slapped a thigh for Dog to follow, and then played the beam on the narrow trail. Come on, if you want. I could hear the water at the middle fork down below, that and the breeze that fluttered the new chartreuse leaves of the cottonwood trees that had just broken free a week ago. The leaves flickered an almost radioactive color green, and twirled like a kaleidoscope caught in the light of the flashlight, sending me back to a time when I was a kid, fishing with my father, and was first getting to know this canyon. What are you reading, son? I lowered my book and looked at him.
The Outlaw Trail? History of Butch Cassidy.
He threw out another graceful cast, one that it seemed to me any trout in the 10-mile length of the middle fork of the Powder River would have been happy to lay into, even this early in the season. The Charles Kelly book?
Yes, sir.
He nodded, his gray eyes following the fly as it drifted near the opposite bank on a cool March morning, with the melting snow wetter than a well, the hanging droplets clinging to the undersides of the bushes. Good book. He wrote it when there were still people around who knew the Wild Bunch, primary research material being the best.
Yes, sir.
Is that my signed first edition?
Yes, sir.
Giving up on the cast, he stripped the 5-weight line in and prepared to present another to the finicky fish. You'll make sure to keep it dry and that it returns to my study undamaged.
Yes, sir.
Watching the ripples that swept just under the skim ice of the water, where the sun reflected like a jewel case, I kept wondering why we were here. I guess because it was uncommonly warm for the time of year, and my father had gotten one of his wild hares and decided we should go fishing. We'd tromped through the snow and broke a trail down to the river, where he stood and I sat, having scraped the snow from a boulder. He flicked the rod tip forward, but just as he did, the wind came up and carried the gray hackle peacock into the bushes on the other side. March in Wyoming is a useless month, where all you can do is wish the wind would stop blowing. He yanked, but the fly stayed stuck. Little wonder to me that Spirina the Haruspex warned Caesar of the Ides of March. He yanked again, but this time the leader broke, the gossamer line falling to the water without the lure. Damn! He pulled another fly from the small wool patch on his vest as I asked about the outlaw.
He never killed anybody?
Butch Cassidy? Sliding his glasses onto his nose, he slipped the leader's tippet through the eye of a fresh fly, expertly tying a clinch knot and clipping the tag end with a small tool that hung from his vest.
Nope. And he said he never robbed an individual, just banks and railroads that he said had been robbing people for years.
I watched as my father flipped his arm back to a 10 o'clock position, the line looping out behind him and then suddenly forward, sending his hand-tied fly across the stream and under a large bush that hung over the fast-moving water.
But he robbed banks, and banks are where people keep their money.
I guess he didn't think of it that way.
He adjusted, playing in a little and mending the line, keeping the arc upstream.
Anyway, he went to jail for that, but at his parole hearing, he promised a judge he'd never rob another bank in Wyoming.
Did he?
No, he went and robbed banks in Utah, Nevada. So I guess he was a man of his word of sorts.
I glanced around the canyon.
And they used to be here?
My father nodded his head upstream.
One of their hideouts, a cave, was over there, or so they say.
Can we go see it?
He turned toward me.
I thought we were here to fish.
We are, but
maybe after we catch a few.
We come back to camp empty-handed, and that mother of yours is going to think we were just here to take a nap.
Yes, sir. Dutifully placing his book in my rucksack, I picked up my rod and, pulling a few yards of line from my own reel, draped it out in the water and flipped it forward, rolling the line out about a yard from his.
Poacher.
Our lines danced to the right in the vibrant water.
Do you think they were bad men?
He thought about it as he stripped his line in.
Well, it's debatable as to whether Butch killed anybody, but at least three of the others did.
Feeling a tug on my line, I lifted and watched as a 12-inch brown trout arched and spit my fly back at me.
Darn!
I've told you, don't pull up to set the hook. Go sideways, and preferably upstream so the current does some of your work for you.
I moved past him and redirected my cast.
He had pulled his own line in and then threw it, and I watched as the gentle loop played out on the surface of the water, an even larger brown snapping up the fly, my father steadily hauling it in.
I watched as he netted the fish, carefully taking it and slapping its head against a nearby boulder, before flipping open his fillet knife, cleaning him out and placing him on the dampened moss in his willow creel.
But Butch and Sundance never killed anybody?
He stood, towering above me.
That's the story.
So maybe they weren't such bad guys. Maybe they just rejected the rules of society and wanted to make up their own game.
His voice took a different tone.
They were thieves, Walter. They took things that didn't belong to them, intimidating and harassing people all over this country. The amount of effort they put into stealing and hiding, think what they could have accomplished if they had turned their efforts toward an honest life. Gunned down at 40 years of age, they were men of low character, and they all met bad ends.
Quietly stripping in my line, I waited and then watched as he moved up the bank. He turned and looked back at me.
There's a tendency in our society to romanticize the exploits of outlaws and gangsters and insistence that they're Robin Hood-type characters, that they have more in common with us than the people whom we hire to protect us and enforce our laws. I don't buy that. I think that when you pick up a gun and use it to take things away from people, it doesn't matter how clever or charming you are, you're just a thief, plain and simple.
I nodded. He studied me for what seemed like a long while.
You want to go look at that cave?
Yes, sir.
He started off as I secured my line and stumbled after him with a hidden smile.
How do you get low character, anyway?
He called back.
By not listening to your father.
I guess you can't call it daydreaming at night. So are you sleepwalking?
Surfacing from my memories, I caught myself about to miss a switchback that would have sent me tumbling down a scree field and into the canyon.
I guess.
She watched as dog went ahead.
See anything?
No, but with this heavy tree canopy, they could have a bonfire going down there and we'd never see it. It'll be another quarter of a mile before we get to the treetops. She sighed, having stopped at the switchback slightly above me.
If I can't shoot you, can I shoot myself?
No.
Come on, this is a good exercise. She started after me. Drop dead. Starting to feel the stitch in my side, I mumbled to myself, I may. I heard that. We finally reached the treetops, but still couldn't see any sign of life, other than a group of mule deer Dog must have spooked. Chances were good that if Abarane and Liam had made it down here before dark, they were holed up in a pup tent somewhere, snoozing soundly in their sleeping bags. I found it hard to believe that Abe was abusing his grandson, and even as inherently dangerous as the family was, I doubted he had killed his son-in-law. I guess I thought I might get answers to some of the questions that had been mounting up, and so I did what I did best in these situations, and placed one foot in front of the other. The canopy gave way to a boulder field, trailing into a rock shelf that ran diagonally down the canyon and tapered back around a cornice where Dog stood looking back at us. I waited as Vic caught up and then continued along the edge until it cut back and the sound of the rushing water filled our ears. She gestured toward the beast. You think he knows where they are? More than we do. Zipping my jacket, I cast the beam eastward toward Powder Junction. It was colder down here, a product of the stream's humidity having been ice and snow only days ago. Now what? And don't say we should split up and cover more ground, because in the movies, that's how people die. We should split up. She made to unholster her sidearm again. We don't know which direction they went, but I don't think they could have gone far, so just head down that way a couple hundred yards, and if you don't see anything, come back. And you? Dog and I'll do the same in this direction. Eventually one of us will find them, and when we do, we just stay put till the other comes back, got it? Who gets the flashlight? I started to hand it to her when she held up her phone and illuminated the ground in front of her. Just kidding, Squanto. Watching her go, I turned upstream and followed Dog toward the mountains. Realizing they could be anywhere, I played the beam up the hillside, figuring that if they made camp, they might have made it on higher ground. It would take a hell of a rain to flood the canyon, but stranger things had happened. Lifting my face, I looked out from under the brim of my hat and was pleasantly surprised to see a few stars in the sky. The water was roiling, and the chances of catching a fish were relatively slim, something Abe would most certainly have been aware of. But maybe, as I had said, he was looking for something beyond fish. I'd been a disappointment to my father, who'd been a maestro with a fly rod, because I always brought one of his books with me and settled in a shady spot to while away the hours as he actively fished, providing the fresh fillets for my mother's cast-iron frying pan. Food had tasted better then, and the air had seemed sweeter, but maybe it was just the memories that made it so. There is no sweetness without loss. What I would give for 5 minutes to ask all the questions I hadn't, and listen to all the answers I'd ignored. Continuing on, I caught a flash of metal to my right, and stepped closer to the stream so that I could shine the flashlight beam toward the water, the light revealing a broken bamboo rod and a maroon South Bend Oronomatic fly reel. I balanced on a boulder and reached down with my free hand, lifting the tackle up and studying it. It was about the 60s vintage that I would assume Abarane would carry, fly fishermen being almost as superstitious as ballplayers and cowboys about giving up their worn-out tools. I glanced around and could see where a large swipe of moss had been scraped away under the surface of the rock where I stood. It was a deep tub, and if you fell here, you were getting wet. Playing the beam around, I hoped that was all that had happened. There was nothing on the opposite bank, so I played the flashlight on the hillside behind me, hoping to see a tent or at least a nest of sleeping bags, but there was still nothing. I was at a large V with the buttress of the canyon thrusting straight up a good 1,000 feet toward me, and I was pretty sure this was the spot where my father and I had usually fished. Glancing back over my shoulder, I could see the abutment where a rock formation I knew pretty well stuck out, and the scree pile with a notorious cave was hiding. I thought about how much effort it would have taken, after falling in, to climb up there. You crazy old bastard. I whistled for Dog and then carefully laid the rod across the path so that Vic could find it, pointing the tip toward the outlaw cave. The wind was picking up a little and it felt like a front was moving in, but nothing that would change the weather much other than to raise or lower the temperature some 20 degrees. I could see the vague glimmer from Vic's phone and figured she must have already started back, having found nothing in that direction.
I took another breath and stretched, immediately regretting it, then bowed down to try to make the stabbing pain go away. I placed a hand out on a boulder and found the rhythm of my breathing. Slowly standing, I turned and looked up the slope and could have sworn I saw something move just as Dog barked. Starting after him, I slipped in the scree but found a clearer pathway that led off to the left and steadily rose up to the cave. I could see a bit of light as if from a dying campfire flickering off the cave's rocky mouth above a few bushes that I didn't remember which blocked the opening. Funny how things changed in a half century. I reached a hand up, grabbed the nearest bush, and pulled myself the rest of the way, taking handfuls as I went like a longshoreman pulling a ship to the wharf. Standing at the opening, I could see the dog was sniffing around someone lying on a sleeping bag on the other side of the dying campfire. Huffing my breath in and out, I caught up with myself, took a few steps in and glanced to the right, seeing a pack, another rod, and some supplies stashed against the wall. It was Abe in the sleeping bag, and I was about to step around the small fire and stoop to him when I heard something in the back of the cave just as Dog growled and bristled. I couldn't see anything even with the flashlight. Liam? Nothing. Dog barked. I had the sense that someone or something was there watching me. I rested my hand on my Colt just in case. Liam, remember me? I'm the sheriff who came and visited you and your grandfather a couple of days ago at his ranch. Nothing. Don't worry about Dog. He's friendly. Nothing. Liam, my deputy Sancho gave you a badge. A deputy is a star that makes noise. Nothing. I'd just about given up when I heard the siren. Dog barked again, but then wagged and moved forward. I smiled. That's it, Liam. That's the toy. Remember me? I'm here to help you and your granddad. There was some movement in the back of the cave, and the young boy stepped out from the shadows. He blew the whistle again and, without another word, walked toward me and Dog, who gave him a broad lick in the face. Liam sat at Abe's feet on the other side of the fire, petted Dog, and breaking green twigs, fed them into the tiny blaze. I angled to the side. You need drier wood. He raised his face to me, shiny with tears in the flickering light. I nodded. Don't worry, I'll get some. Glancing at Abe, I lowered my voice. Is your grandfather asleep? I waited a moment. Liam? He shook his head, swiping at the tears, and hugged Dog. Chapter 11. His pulse was very faint and his skin was frigid, but the tough old buzzard was still alive, if barely. I turned and looked at the boy as he stood against the rock wall, one palm pressed flat against a stone, his arm around Dog. I decided to lie. He's going to be okay. Dog barked again, and a light shone in on us from the mouth of the cave. You find Batman and Robin? Over here. Vic crossed toward us and, with a glance at the boy, knelt down. Hi! He nodded, but still said nothing. Vic felt Abe's pulse and then pried one of his eyelids back before turning to look at me, her own eyes widening before turning to Liam. Honey, what happened to your grandfather? The boy just stood there. Did he fall in the water? He nodded. She leaned forward and, after placing an ear against the old man's chest, glanced back at me, lowering her voice to a whisper. Severe hypothermia with dysrhythmia. I sighed. Yep. We've got to get him out of here. Running the topography through my head, I couldn't think of a single spot where we could possibly land a medevac helicopter. She interrupted my train of thought. We're going to need help. I can carry him out. Are you nuts? There's no way. You take Liam and get back up to the rim. Drive to where you can get a signal and get Double Tough and Scott out here. Maybe get Casper to send a helicopter and land it at the pullout topside with full setup. Her laugh was a bitter bark. And what? You just waltz out of here with him on your back? In your condition? My condition is fine. I'll start out with him, and then when you get in touch, you can send those guys down to get him. It's not like I'll get very far.
she barely whispered. And two dead guys are better than one? Why not wait?
You felt his skin and listened to his heart. He must have a core body temperature of about 75.
I lowered my own voice even more. The farther I get him, the better shot he has at surviving.
I gestured toward Liam. Now get him out of here. The faster we move, the better.
We can't risk moving him. He's an eyelash from being dead.
Leaning into her, I gave out with the old ER saying, they're not dead until they're warm and dead. She glanced down at Abe, reached out and placed her fingertips at his throat before looking back at me.
I'll go, but only if you promise to just stay here with him, and no carrying him out there in the dark up a cliff.
I nodded.
Walt,
go.
She shook her head and then turned to look at the boy. Hey, Liam, you want to take a walk with me?
He didn't move.
I've got candy in the truck. And we can go for a ride and drive real fast and blow the siren and flip on the lights. Want to do that?
He still didn't move.
Gotta be better than sitting around watching your grandfather take a nap, huh?
This time he nodded. She stood and went to him and reached down to take his hand. His dog followed after them.
We need to get going. What do you say?
I watched as she led him to the opening and looked back at me, gesturing as if to a dog.
Stay.
Dog sat.
Take him with you. No. I think if you're going to need any backup,